First item on the agenda is introductions and announcements and comments from staff. Rob?
Hello to everyone.
Hello.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Tonight's a good night. One reason it's good is you now have a coordinator, and that is Alicia Nelson. And Alicia, I'm sure, has said hi to everyone so far and has been contacting you and getting up to speed. This is her first meeting. So we certainly welcome Alicia, and Alicia's no stranger to the agency. She's in about the 5.5 year mode already. So she has a lot of information about the recreational
fisheries,
about process, so it's really good.
Very good.
I wanted to let you know that. The second thing I wanted to let you know, I think things were pretty successful this time. When you met in November, you wanted to have what were called then expedited projects. So it was a situation where there were projects that had to be funded, and it became very awkward because it was a little bit out of step. The reason it was out of step is that previously for about, I'll say, 4 years, we had a one-cycle system with the Recreational Fishing Advisory Board. We're back to two cycles, and so tonight most of the projects you'll hear fall exactly where you wanted them to be. There is one project, and Dr. Orth is here, for submerged aquatic vegetation project. And the reason Dr. Orth is here, and he talked and tried his best, but he really does need to have funding at least by June to cover what he's been doing. And I'll let Dr. Orth go over that at the time. And I really think, other than that, we just look forward to a good year and you know, your good expertise as you go through this process.
Thank you, Rob. And welcome to you, Alicia.
And I do have one other thing, so Alicia can say I did my duty for her. We're going to have conflict of interest forms, so before you leave tonight, you've seen those before.
Yeah.
If you can take care of those, that would be great.
I tried to access the one on the Internet, and it kept rejecting it.
Yeah, same thing happened within this agency.
Yeah.
And some of us just went back to the form itself.
Okay, that's good. Thanks. Ms. McCroskey, status of fund?
First of all, you know, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
And my apologies before I begin. We don't have exactly the concrete financial information that I had hoped to have for y'all tonight. If you look at, I'm going to speak from behind the budget tab, the very last page. Right? Can you see it, Mr. Hudgens?
Yep.
It's the page that looks like this. Mr. Hudgens?
Last page, George.
Okay, well, right now we know that we have $2.2 million that's unobligated in the fund.
Wow.
But we also know that we have about $1.5 million in BMRC projects that are to be allocated as of July 1st of this year. And when you come back for your March meeting, you'll see each of those reflected in the page. What we don't have good information on for you tonight is the revenue. And I wanted to just give you a little bit of explanation about that and kind of let y'all know what we've been, where we are. In June, Game and Inland Fisheries overpaid us by $500,000. They knew that there was a problem, but they still went ahead and gave us the money, and they have not paid us since then. So we've not gotten any more money from them for 6 months. And we know that sometime in September, they recouped their payment, their overpayment. And so we're trying to collect the money that we're due for September, as well as the money that they owe us for October, November, and December. So our apologies. We are not able, we've not been able to get any concrete information from y'all. I'm certainly hoping by the next time I see y'all in March, you know, we're going to have resolved that problem.
Do we have any idea what kind of money we're talking about?
I don't believe that we do, because Mrs. Short and I just talked about that right before we came up here, and we don't even have licenses sold for that period, because they generally give us money and then they give us records of the licenses sold. And if we could try and guess based on last year's money, or, you know, last 2 years, but that would be all that it would be, Mr. Randolph. But it will be, at least in my opinion, it's going to be several hundred thousand dollars. So if you take the amount of money that we have right now, the $2.2 million, and you subtract from it the VMRC obligations at July 1st, it leaves you with a little bit more than $700,000. And the majority of that is available to you, because I'm sure most of you remember that game department, I think it was 2 years ago, they reconciled all their systems and found out that they owed us about $600,000 or $700,000, which they then gave us.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, I think this has kind of been a disjointed report, but, you know, that's all we have. But I'd be glad to answer questions if there are any.
Well, based on what you're saying, it looks like we would come up with somewhere around $1 million.
Yes, sir.
That's $769 plus the 3 months, which have not been paid.
Yes, sir. That would certainly be my guess. So I think it's going to be more than that. But, again, we're very hesitant to give you an estimate, because I don't want to give you the wrong estimate.
Yeah.
Okay. So I would appreciate your patience until March, when hopefully we'll be able to have better information for you.
Anybody have any questions for Ms. McCoskey? Moving to item 3, the review of the minutes from September 2012 meeting. Do I hear a motion?
I move that we approve the minutes as written.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried. Moving now to item 4, multi-year projects for 2013 renewal. Item A, 2013 Chincoteague Island Charter Boat Association Take a Kid Fishing Day. Charlie Koski from Chincoteague Island Charter Boat Association, and the request is for $2,088.65. Anyone wish to speak to it? Come on.
Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
This is my first time in front of the board.
Well,
bear with me.
Record for the young lady, will you identify yourself?
My name is Charles Koski. I'm the organizer for the Chincoteague Island Charter Boat Association.
Yeah.
I'm a captain also of a charter boat. Just going to read the project summary as it's written here. Our CIC members will offer their boats, time, and expertise to be able to take the kids fishing who may not have a chance to do this type of sport. We give up our half a day of charters to take the kids out fishing and give them the opportunity for the fun and the sport of it. We also share our knowledge of the fishing, boat safety, conservation, and navigation. The scope is that the younger generation will become experienced anglers through our giving of our time and knowledge. Expanding this event is our plan in the coming years. In 2013, we plan on taking 35 kids. We only had 30 last year, along with chaperones for half a day of fishing. We reach out to the Chincoteague Elementary School and PTA for participants, as well as we went to the Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts also. Okay? We're just trying to get kids away from the routine of Xboxes and computers and get them out on the water and get them experience of fishing. And hopefully they'll become as good a fisherman as we are someday. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Costa? How many do you anticipate kids participate?
We're hoping to get 35.
Yes,
sir.
And then how many chaperones?
We're going to do one chaperone per boat, and that'll be, we're trying to do, fill eight boats.
Five boats, eight boats.
Yes. That'll, well, we split the kids up, and if we get 35, we put four on some boats, five on others.
About 43 to 45 people?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Any other
questions?
Anyone in the audience have any questions? Thank you, Charlie.
Well, we did provide T-shirts and everything for the kids, and I got pictures of last year's that we had in the rods and their T-shirts. They all had a great time. We also had a cookout afterwards, and they really enjoyed it. We funded ourselves the first year. Last year, we did have help from VMRC, Recreation Fishing Alliance Board, so we appreciate that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. You all have a good night.
Item B, excuse me, 2013 Knights of Columbus Annual Kids Fishing Day, Greg Brown. Come forward, Greg.
First, let me say I'm not Greg Brown.
Sir. Oh, okay.
Greg Brown is about this tall.
Oh, okay.
Greg and his wife had to go to Key West, and he called me up and asked me to do this for him. So, Happy New Year.
You came in on a short end of the deal, Fred.
Yes, sir, I did.
Will you identify yourself with the person?
My name is Rick Paradiso, and I, too, am a representative of the Knights of Columbus Council 10804. We're asking for your support to help us with the 26th annual fishing day, Kids Fishing Day. We take approximately 200 kids per year to the Lynnhaven Fishing Pier. We give them lunch. We give them 4 hours of fishing. We give them a rod and reel and a T-shirt. In addition, Greg and his co-lead on this event go around to each of the 9 local Boys and Girls Clubs to drum up support for fishing, give them an education pitch, and tell them about the event and generate a lot of interest. As I said, this will be the 26th year that we've done this. You helped us out last year, which was great, and so we're asking for your help again this year.
Thank you. Any questions from the board? Anyone in the audience have any questions?
How many did you have last year?
We had 182 kids show up, 81 chaperones, and 26 folks from the boys, adults from the Boys and Girls Club.
Thank you, sir.
Sure.
Moving to item C, 2013 Hope House and Oak Grove Nursing Home Fishing Excursions and Clinics. Joseph Stevenson, Paul Anderson, and the Great Bridge Fishermen Association, $5,000. Come forward, sir. $5,925.
Hope you all had a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
My name is Tim Stevenson. I'm the membership chairman for the Great Bridge Fishing Association. You guys helped us with this the last couple of years. We're on 10, 11, 12. We're not sure exactly when we first started doing this, but I turned this application in last summer, and since then we changed what we wanted to do. And I called up and told Alicia, and she said just to let you guys know what the differences were. Y'all had this, my old request, right? Pretty much it's the same thing. Last year we put in to do 2 boat trips, and because we were doing on the smaller boats out of Lynnhaven. So we decided, and it was very difficult to get the wheelchairs on the boats. We had to lift them up and over and down. And we're getting old, and it's getting hard to do. So we looked for an easier way, and we went to Virginia Beach Fishing Pier, Fishing Center, and the Rudy Angler, which is a much larger boat. Also, they can pull it right up to their floating dock, and we can wheel them on. Man, what a difference. What a difference that made. And that's what we're going to do again this year. So instead of 2 boat trips, we're going to change it to 1 boat trip. And it's going to make it a little bit cheaper. Before we had 2 boat trips, it was $2,600. We're asking for just 1 boat trip this time for $2,000. So we got that a little bit cheaper. And because we're going to do it just 1 boat trip, we don't have to feed them twice. So that got a little bit cheaper and what have you. So do you want me to read the...
No, that's right.
What we're going to be asking for is $5,350 instead of $5,925. Okay, and I got some pictures here. Did I do it wrong?
Yeah, you did it wrong.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, password to you, Alicia?
I was supposed to do that with this now, but...
Yes, sir.
A touchscreen will get you every time.
Would you like to click through it?
Oh, I just want the first picture first, and then put it on automatic. There you go. That's a picture of the boat trip. After the boat trip was over, we gave them all yellow T-shirts that said Hope House excursion, what have you, on the back of it. So we made them all put it on, stand there for the picture. So you guys can get an idea of what it's like. We had around 80 people. I think it was 81 people on the boat trip. We had 89 people, I think, on our pier trip last year. And every year it seems like we gain a few more. And the people really love it. we're not even finished with the boat trip. They start asking us about next year's while we're on there. And some of these people, they can't even talk. And but they get smiles on their faces. It's just unbelievable how happy they are, because we're the only people that really take them out on a trip like this. The rest of the time they're going to, I think they play bingo, and they go on a little trip here, a little trip there. But this is something that's really big. The Rudy trip was really a bonus, because on the way out, we were going to be fishing in Chesapeake Bay, but on the way down the beach, the porpoises gave us a show all the way down and all the way back. So they were all excited about that, you know, because most of them hadn't ever really seen them do that. The fish were going right alongside the boat, jumping out of the water, and they were going crazy over that. But these are some pictures from past trips, and you can kind of see what goes on. I think this is about our 12th year of doing this. The first 8 or 9 years, the club paid for it, and then we found out that we could petition some money, and you guys helped us out, and then we missed a year, and then the last 2 years I've done it. This will be my third year of trying, of coming up here between for you guys. But, anyway, is there any questions I can answer?
Anyone have questions?
You've prepared a revised form, have you?
Yeah.
Do you have that, Lisa?
Yeah.
Okay, so you'll be able to send us the revised form that we'll have? Okay, thank you.
I emailed it to you.
Yeah.
And the lady that I used to work with,
Sonia,
we used to take her out on the boat trips and out on tour trips. And if you wanted to do that, and
then go
visit with us.
But you have to fillet fish afterwards, so good.
The boat license won't cover her. She has to have a private license. Anyone in the audience have any questions? Thank you, Mr. Stevenson.
Do you want to shut this off?
Yeah.
Moving to item D, 2000 Youth Development Hooked on Fishing Adventure, Bob Hewlett, Bob Pride, Virginia Charter Boat Association. I don't see Bob. Anyone here from the Charter Boat Association? Okay. Moving on then to item E, 2013 Saxis and Morley's Wharf Fishing Piers Youth Fishing Tournament. Alan Evans, come forward, sir. Yep.
I'm Bill Frager, by the way. Alan's not here.
Okay.
I have some pictures.
This is you.
Yeah.
Okay. These are old pictures, but this is from 2011.
They're representative.
More, just give you an idea of the size kids we get. We get a lot of little kids. But anyway, we have We've done two events for the past several years, one at Saxis and the other at Morley's War. They're pier fishing events. We attract generally kids who don't have other opportunities to fish, and some of them are pretty young. The club beforehand does puts out a little bit of chum, and sometimes they have a lot of action off of these piers. Most of the fish are released. In fact, I think typically all the fish are released. They're encouraging conservation there. As you can see from the size of these kids, a lot of them need help, you know. And what we typically do, there we go. What we typically do is pair one adult with each shot. And the adults, some of them are club members, some of them are parents. But for some of these kids, I mean, they'd have a hard time with the rods and reels. We do have prizes. We give just three prizes for the three largest fish. But that's not really the emphasis of the event. It's a fun event, primarily. The kids, we give them a T-shirt, fishing rod, and a reel. And we also have a little cookout for them where we serve hot dogs, chips, and drinks. It's really a fun event. We like to have good weather, but we don't always have it. Morley's, an event at Morley's last year, we had some pretty bad weather. In fact, I think on the original dates we got 12 inches of rain. We postponed it and got another bad day, but we still had, I think it was 42 or 43 kids show up on a cold, windy day. Now, this year we got an even bigger challenge because, as I'm sure some of you know, the Saxis Pier was heavily damaged in Hurricane Sandy. At this point, I don't have firm information on when that pier is going to be replaced. Typically, what we've done in the past is we've had the Saxis event in June and the Morley's Wharf event in September. This year we're going to reverse the dates, hoping that September that the Morley's Wharf will have been repaired. We don't have a guarantee of that at this point. And what we're thinking is if the pier has not been repaired by September, then we just have a second event at Morley's Wharf, and we hope that would be satisfactory. You all supported us in the past, and we hope that you can support us again. Any questions?
No. Ken?
Charles? Any questions?
Thank you, sir.
Moving to item F, 2013 Sunshine Children's Fishing Program. Says Denny Dobbins, but I don't see Denny. Anyone here to represent item F? Seeing none, we'll move to item five, research projects for 2013. Item H, restoration of the Smerge aquatic vegetation habitat in Chesapeake Bay, Virginia Coastal Bay, is Dr. Robert Orth. Thank you, Bob.
Thanks. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
It's great to be here, and I very much appreciate your willingness to hear this proposal a little bit earlier than I had expected, but what I want to do is just quickly go through a couple of our accomplishments. While I came here in July, we now have some additional data that I wanted to share with you, just because, again, the type of project that we're talking about is something that no one else in the world has really seen. I mean, in terms of habitat enhancement, there really is no other place in the world that's really seeing what we've been doing over on the seaside. It's a one-of-a-kind project, and, you know, if you had asked me a dozen years ago if we would be where we are today based on what we saw 12 years ago, I would have never said yes. But this has been truly, quite an interesting project. So just quickly, some of our successes have been pretty much in the James River, but I'm going to stick with the coastal bays because this is, again, something unique in the history of anyone that's been doing any kind of habitat enhancement work around the world. And, we keep track of everything just because that's our job, is to find out who's doing what. And again, our goal, we want to get the eelgrass back to the coastal bays where they were 70 years ago, and a lot of the services that were provided by these beds to these areas. This whole effort of restoring eelgrass has been seed-based. One comment that I want to make sure I respond to is that We use quite a few volunteers during the time that we collect seeds that we have. We work very closely with the Nature Conservancy during this time period, but we have had in the past, not last year because we had a very interesting year last year, but we've had up to 100 volunteers that come out with us during a two-week period to harvest these seeds. And we're trying to get more. It's a real tough job trying to link up when we know the flowering plants are going to be out there and getting volunteers. Last year we had a very warm March, which meant that the flowering started a lot earlier and the Nature Conservancy couldn't change their schedule of getting volunteers. We had to take advantage of a very narrow window this year to get our harvesting machines and everything and our people out to get the material. So we're going to again have to try to work very closely with the Nature Conservancy. We think getting volunteers out, it's a unique area, and I just wish we could get more people out there because we've been out there and you're in the middle of, you know, what amounts to is nowhere, and you're close to Virginia Beach or Washington, but it's just like you're looking and there's no other people around. It's just this really pretty area. So we want to continue that effort. Here's the success story. What we do is we put seeds in these acre plots, which I've told you before. You know, through 2012, we basically put a little over 50 million eelgrass seeds in 380 acres. That's this bottom blue line. As I said before, we map all the grass beds from aerial photography as part of our mapping program. And as of 2012, and this is a number we didn't have, we're looking at about 4,600 acres of bottom in the coastal bays that now have eelgrass. And the difference between this blue line down here and this green line is all what happens by nature. You know, we put our seeds in plots so that we can follow everything, but because nature has a good way of spreading seeds naturally, which is what it does anyway, the difference of that 350 to 4,600 is all spread by nature. So what we've done is just given a kick to Mother Nature, and she's taken off from there. We still have some places that are challenging us getting plants, and that's where we're going with the next step, because you saw a huge increase here. This was pretty much one particular bay. We're working in a couple other bays that are a little more challenging in getting the plants back, but that's important because the next step, and again, I think I showed you this shot. These are aerial photographs looking down through the belly of a plane from 2 miles up, and again, the size of the areas you're dealing with, these are the four bays. This is all grass in this white area here, all grass. This is the area of South Bay where we're doing the bay scallop work, which I'll talk about next. I told you about how we do our eelgrass. These are one-acre plots, so you're looking at, you know, a fairly sizable area, but it looks like a pinhole. And again, as I said, we put them in plots so we can monitor it. You know, as a scientist, we want to do things just right so we have lots of numbers that we can tell people about. And this is the only way to do it. You got to do it in the right way, or else it's not going to make a difference in terms of how people see it. So this is a big bed in South Bay that we started work at and where we're doing our bay scallop work. And I mentioned some of this earlier, but I want to show you a couple things. First, in 2008, in the whole United States, there were 131,000 pounds of bay scallops harvested United States-wide. If you look at what was produced by these coastal bays back in 1930, there was 1.8 million pounds of bay scallops landed in these two counties. That's where we're hoping to go with the way this project is going, is getting bay scallops. And what we're doing, we had a project that was started in 2009 that dovetailed with our putting the grass beds back. And this project was funded by stimulus funds. And working very closely with Mark, what we're doing is putting all these bay scallops in cages, because the only way to get them to not move is to put them in cages, because scallops like to move around because they flap around. And in order to get them to spawn successfully, we've got to have a lot of bay scallops in a lot of cages in close quarters, which is what you see in this particular area here. Well, how do we assess the success of this? What we do is we go out and we assess little baby scallops by using what we call a vacuum cleaner or a suction sampler. So here's Mark Lugenbach suctioning a small area with some of his summer students. And that's the only way you can really see how many little baby scallops there are, because the baby scallops attach to the blades of grass up to about not quite an inch, a little less than a half an inch. They stay there, and then they drop down to the bottom. And the only way you can really tell how many big scallops is you put a bunch of people in the water, and you literally by hand feel for them. And again, we have to do this quantitatively because we've got to have the numbers to be able to tell people you're putting all this effort to do this type of work, how many scallops are there successively. So when we do a project like this, we're sampling both the small guys and the big ones, you know, with two different methods. Now, I'm going to walk you through really quickly this picture. This is, again, that big bed in South Bay. You're looking down to the belly of a plane. This area in red is essentially a little less than 1,000 acres. So it's a pretty big area on a small picture. And what we did was we randomly put these collection sites throughout that. So, you know, we set up a big table and said, well, we're going to sample here and sample there randomly. And one thing you'll notice, again, in the yellow, those are all scallops that we collected in a sample that were less than 20 millimeters. And the white numbers, either it's a 0, 1, or 2, are scallops greater than 20 millimeters. I tried to circle all the places that we found scallops. You can see there's a lot of zeros. It's because the way the scallops settle, they go in very discrete areas, and that's why you have to do things randomly to come up with how many scallops are in an area. So in this past summer, which, again, I didn't have these numbers, and I tried again to circle all the numbers that are yellow, which are the really small ones, or the white ones, which are the big ones, and we estimated that in July there were a little less than 2 million bay scallops in this grass bed versus about 47,000 adult scallops. Now, that may not seem like a lot, but the fact is that there were none there 2 years ago. And again, this is just kind of one point on a scale that I'm hoping will show in future years that there'll be more. Now, the interesting thing, and I was talking to Ken about this, where is this part of the project going in terms of recreational slash commercial fishery? We're not sure where it's going to go because no one's ever done anything like this before. No one's ever restored a recreational or commercial fishery the way this is. So we're charting kind of new territory, and I've made this basic presentation to the VMRC commissioners, and I said, you know, we just don't know where this is going to go. It's just unique, and we're going to be working very closely with the commission about this. If this turns out to be as successful as the seagrass habitat, which is why, you know, we need the money to keep this going, then there's going to be a unique opportunity to figure out, okay, how do we work with the recreational and the commercial people to have like kind of a season for harvesting bay scallops? And it might be one of these kind of local fisheries, like you have, you know, local you know, vegetables coming from, you know, one area. You know, that's where we're kind of anticipating. Now, we just don't know, the fact that there was that many scallops harvested in the 30s. If we had that, that could be a much bigger commercial fishery than, you know, we can imagine. But again, you know, 15 years ago, whoever thought I'd be here telling you how much grass there was in these bays, I'm hoping that in 5 or 6 years we'll be able to say something similar to what's happening. But the big success is I'm hoping this is what I like to see in the not-too-distant future. What's happening now is this, speckled trout. You know, this is these are the guys that, you know, everyone looks for in the spring and in the fall. And generally, grass beds are, you know, some of the big areas where people fish for speckled trout. Now, the seaside's a little different, and because there have been no grass beds there for 70 years, we think it's going to take some time for the speckled trout, who usually are fished in some of these marsh edges and areas where there isn't grass. But I think once these fish start chemically getting cues to these grass beds, I think we're going to have some substantial populations of speckled trout in these grass beds. And again, another place for people to fish. So we're pretty excited. You know, again, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for your support over the years, which is why, again, this project comes before you for funding for the next year. Now, the way we've described the funding in the past, every year, you know, we look at all of our funds, and it's a pretty big project, so it requires more than just the money we get from you. So we have money that comes from other sources. If we get a pot of money from, let's say, the Army Corps, that might support a lot more. We hold off spending these funds. So, like example, the last time we got funds, we've used those funds for 3 years rather than 1 year. And while you might see this as a one-year project, again, we're striving to get money from other sources so that we can extend these funds for more than just 1 year, which is what we've done in the past. It's just that as of, you know, come May, the money that we have from the last project, which we've asked for continual extensions, I think we're going to run out, you know, come May. And there are some big requests for proposals coming out that we apply for. But, you know, this is the typical grant process that we're used to. It's, you know, fighting for every buck. But the fact is that we have a success story. People want to jump on the train. And, you know, again, with the scallop and the speckled trout stuff, you know, it's pretty exciting. I mean, you know, it's, again, whoever thought we would be where we are today. So, and the other thing, you know, we have a big educational component. We work with other groups because, you know, we do interact with people like the Bay Foundation with other types of transplanting, like in the James River and other places. We are a source that we work with them. But this this particular project is the one that's really pushing all the buttons right now. And again, I just have to thank you all for all the years of support. I, like I said, couldn't be here without your support. And so that's where we are.
Any questions for Dr. Orr?
Yeah.
It seems that this, you know, propagating seagrass is going to be beneficial to commercial anglers as well as recreational anglers. Mm-hmm. Is there any money coming from?
Oh yeah,
from
well, we get some support, which actually helps us with keeping our fingers on the pulse of what people are doing in terms of the commercial side. We watch some of the boat scarring, so we do get some money from them. Not in the amount. I mean, we get money every year, so it's like $22,000, which every year adds up. So, you know, if we look at what we get for from you for our work, which is if you funded this at 146, that would be for probably three years the way we are, have been working. So we get about $60,000, $65,000 from the commercial side.
And the reappearance of the scallops, is that that's a phenomenon as a result of creating these eelgrass beds?
Absolutely, yes.
But that's just a natural phenomenon.
Well, we have to get, it's like anything else. You don't get something unless you put something there. Just
right.
Like had we not started back in the late 90s by putting eelgrass seeds into this, there would never have been any grass beds.
Well, I wonder when, not to interrupt you, when,
that's okay.
How quickly are the commercial people going to go in and
well,
start scraping
is,
them up?
Like I said, this is unknown territory. We just don't know. No one's really done this before. And, you know, again, I make a presentation to the commission every single year, and I bring them up to speed of what we're doing with this project. And I've said every year that, you know, if, for example, in July when we do this bay scallop survey, if we see more, then I think that's at a point where we're going to have to sit down and start thinking very carefully, you know, what do we do to develop or to have a sustainable fishery? You know, we just don't want to go in there and ruin everything that's taken a decade or more. And the commission has been very, very amenable to really watching these grass beds and trying to protect them. And we work, you know, my staff, we work very closely with the commission staff with regard to projects that would impact grass beds. So trust me that we will be working very closely with all of the interested parties to make sure that, you know, this project doesn't get derailed. You know, and again, we're very concerned about the recreational people that would come in here because, you know, this is, again, something that, you know, recreation people love to go and, you know, target a fish that is one of the tastiest fish around.
What's the time frame for scallops to become mature?
Less than a year.
Less than a year?
Yeah, the bay scallops in this region spawn twice, once in the spring and once in the fall. We were talking over dinner about this. The ones that are spawned in the fall, the ones that grow so rapidly that they actually spawn again in the spring, but they make it through the summer and then they spawn again. These bay scallops only live 2 years. It's not like a long life species like an oyster that might live 4, 5, 6 years. After 2 years, that's it, which is why we'd have to work very closely with, if we were talking about a recreational harvest, it'd have to occur in the fall. We would not want to take out a population before it has to spawn, just like with striped bass. Remember that they didn't open the fishery until, and the size of the fish, that was 18 inches because that's when they really start spawning. So the whole issue of developing a fishery and trying to make it a sustainable fishery all deals with understanding how long an animal lives and when it spawns. Because after it spawns in the fall, more than likely it's not going to live much more longer than that. So 2 years is a short period, but there are big fisheries in Carolina, and there's a recreational fishery also in New England for it. And they do the same thing as we do. They're ahead of the game in terms of that aspect, and we're learning from things they do. But they're doing essentially what we're doing. They're enhancing scallop populations by putting scallops out in small areas and letting them spawn. And then they have, last couple of years, a very nice commercial fishery, and have a recreational fishery also for it.
Other than humans, what's the biggest predator?
It depends on how big. The small size, a lot of them. And that the big one's not many because they can swim. You know, you get count on those rays that come in. The rays will get it. But, again, these scallops have a very interesting anti-predator device. When they sense a predator, they get up and swim. The oysters can't. You know, but scallops, you know, because they clap their valves, if they sense a predator like a big conch, they'll move out of the way. And they can do that with some of the rays that are there. So, the biggest predator would be, and there's not a lot of blue crabs there, so it would be probably the rays if they came in and, you know, they could scarf them up. But we think it's a lot, you know, it's a decent habitat out there. And again, we're watching. I mean, we're out there all the time. And again, with a project this, of this scope and magnitude, we're not going to let anyone mess it up. Bob. Yes, sir.
I think I have three questions.
Oh, okay.
Now, you said that the scallops that you have presently are in cages?
That's correct.
Now, do you ever let them out of the cages?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. After they...
So once they're adults, you let them go?
Right. Well, after they spawn a couple times, what's interesting, I actually have a picture here, but we're finding a problem of putting these scallops in cages for more than 2 years. And I had a picture at the VMRC Commission. What happens when they sit in these cages, believe it or not, there are so many oyster larvae out there that they actually, these scallops in these cages get covered with oysters, and they aren't really very productive after because they cover the shells. So we're having to really now reexamine when we put these scallops out, when the oyster larvae are out there, because there's so many oysters in these coastal bays right now because they've been trying to restore the oysters also, that they settle in these areas where there's not a lot of current. So we're working to better understand when we put the scallops in the cages. Soon after the oyster larvae set, then we can put them in cages. So there's a lot of give and take about understanding what we do with these scallops. Once the oysters are set, we put them in the cages, and then we'll keep them there for a year, and then we let them free. So that's question one.
Have you done any water quality studies in the places where you put the scallops to see what changes in the water quality that they
the biggest
provide?
Changes that are occurring in these areas, and we have these instruments called YSIs. We have one in South Bay and one in Spider Crab Bay, and they monitor 24/7, and that data are telemetry, and anyone can really access that data if they know what the website is. But we've been watching temperature and how dirty the water is and how what the temperatures are. The biggest changes that have occurred in terms of clarity of the water have not been with scallops, but with the growth of the grass beds, because they're the things that really change the quality of the water more than anything else. So during the time that we've had these monitors out, the water has significantly cleared. Even though it was okay before, the water has gotten much clearer. And I think I may have shown you some of that data, and I can send you a report. But the water clarity in the summertime is significantly greater today than it was 5 years ago because the grass has gotten so thick, and they basically baffle the waves and collect the sediment on the leaves and they drop down to the bottom. So, you know, the beds are really the things that really improve it. While the bivalves do filter water, it's very insignificant compared to what those grass beds do. That's two.
Okay. The last one is not really a
question. That's what I'm here for.
But you mentioned that you might have difficulty getting volunteers. Have you tried the and I think we have one. You could access the fishing club list.
Well, we announce this all the time on. Well, we let the Nature Conservancy work with because they have a. It's a lot easier for them given some of the legal issues that VIMS has with putting a lot of people on the boat. And the Nature Conservancy, they reach out to as many people as possible. The problem we have is you got to put people in the water, and they either walk or they snorkel. And that's kind of an issue with, you know, really younger kids because you have to have life vests. Most of the people that we work are young adults. We've had high school kids come out, kids who are doing Eagle Scout projects. I'd say the average age is, well, there's a whole range. I mean, we've had people that have been in their 70s. And they loved it. And we have young people coming, and actually from all over the state. The only reason I said we had a problem this past year is because nature threw us kind of a curveball by having an incredibly warm March, and the flowers decided to flower a lot earlier. And the Nature Conservancy had locked in everyone towards the last week in May, first week in June, which is when we've traditionally harvested our plants. And because the plants were ready in May, we had to jump on it because we couldn't lose that window when seeds are available, because if we do, then all the seeds that we would need are gone. They're in the sediment, and they're too hard to collect once they've left the plant.
Anyone else?
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate it very much, and I'll be here in the next cycle if you have any more questions in terms of if there any public comment. So, and come out, and some of you can come out with us. You know, it won't be that hard. We try to find the right weather conditions for everyone.
Thank you, sir. Moving to item six, tentative dates for the future 2013 RFAB meetings. Proposed dates are the public hearing on March 11th at 7 p.m., the work session on May the 13th at 5:30, and the final recommendations being at 7, and the second cycle project applications will be due on June 15th. Is any other business come before us? Do I hear a motion to adjourn?
I move that we adjourn.
So move. We stand adjourned.